Welcome, everyone, to episode 442 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are in the NBA finals. We could only have two games left in this season. The Phoenix Suns are up 2-0, going back to Milwaukee for game three. So we will today get into what Phoenix has done well and how Milwaukee can get back into the series. We will also touch on the latest on the Ben Simmons rumor mill, this time connections to Minnesota. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone whom I hope has recovered from whatever happened on Wednesday. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
I have not. I really have not. We have seen so many things pop up afterwards of English fans apparently spitting on small Danish children in the stadium. Someone just going into a bus to punch a Danish fan because he saw the shirt that he was wearing. So, yeah, all sorts of ugliness, which is why I am so much rooting for Italy tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's go right into the finals, Mort, because there's a lot to get to.
Yeah, let's pivot. Yeah. I agree. Good call.
Yeah. Okay, so Phoenix is up 2-0 in this series. Both games were relatively close, but it never felt like the Bucks were, you know, they like kept it within striking distance. But every time they would make a run, Phoenix has a counterpunch. So
yeah, they were never in the driver's seat.
Right, right. And it's, the victories happened in two very different ways. Game two, you know, Phoenix just erupted from three-point range. Game one, the Bucks tried, you know, just didn't have an answer, basically, for Devin Booker or Chris Paul defensively. So, you know, in game two, it was more the supporting cast. Like, Mikal Bridges had finally had the breakout game that we have been, you know, saying has been long overdue. And then game one, it was, you know, their three stars, CP at 32, Booker 27, 8 and 22. So, but for, how do you think the Bucks need to adjust going into game three? Like, what needs to happen for them to get back into the finals?
They probably need to trade for Damian Lillard.
Okay, well.
No, but like, okay, I'm jesting, but there's an element of truth there, though. They don't have the shot creation. Mm-hmm. We're seeing just how much Phoenix survives off of the shot creation from Chris Paul and Devin Booker. That is objectively a key reason for why they're winning and why they're in the finals in the first place. That has been a great 1-2 punch for them all season long. And I think just having those two guys who can consistently create in the mid-range area, create themselves three-point shots as well as moving the ball to other people, that's just such a luxury. And then you could make the argument, yeah, sure, you know, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, in theory, they can do those things too. Right, but neither are as advanced as Chris Paul or Devin Booker. Like, mm-hmm. if you were to make a list of who are the best shot creators of anyone in this series, like, Chris Paul and Devin Booker would be 1-2. And then there would be a gap, and then you could argue maybe Chris Middleton and then Drew Holiday and then Giannis, even though he's not someone who creates jump shots for himself. So I think at the end of the day, this comes down to shot creation, and Phoenix just has more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Drew, I think we need to get into specifically because he's just really struggled. He's just been so hit or miss throughout these playoffs. Yes. Defensively, he's been great. And I don't want that to get lost in this conversation because I thought, especially in game two, you know, game one, they like dicked around and put PJ Tucker on Chris Paul, and that predictably did not go well. Game two, like Drew that assignment right away. He was right up in CP's jersey. He was really giving CP a hard time. And, you know, Paul finishes with 23 points, but on 10 of 20 shooting, also had 6 turnovers. So was not as effective as he was in game one. But Drew Holiday offensively, 10 points on 4 of 14 shooting in game one. He had, I think, 11 or 12 field goal attempts by the second quarter of game two, he finishes 17.7 of 21 shooting. You know, a lot of those are close to the rim layups that he's just not making. So, you know, if you're the Bucks, you could maybe talk yourself into, well, you know, if Drew and Chris hit the shots that they normally hit, maybe we win game two, and maybe we go home having stolen home court advantage, and this series has a very different feeling. Like, do you think there is something to that? Or, you know,
right.
Can you also bank on 42 and 12 from Giannis, I guess, is the counterpoint to that.
So here's the thing, right? You say the shots that he normally hits. I agree that on the surface of it, like, if you go to the regular season numbers, Drew Holiday was shooting over 50% from the field. He was hitting over 39% from downtown, almost 79% from the free throw line. Those are objectively great numbers. Now let's go to the playoffs, though.
Yeah.
41% overall, 29% from downtown, 67% from the free throw line. I mean, his numbers are just way down. He has shown that in the playoffs, he has not been able to lift his game, offensively speaking. Like, this is a far cry from what he did against the Portland Trailblazers a few years ago when he was instrumental in that first round. I think it was a sweep, right?
Yeah.
The first round sweep against the Blazers, mm-hmm. like, where he was just fantastic. For some reason, he isn't anymore offensively. Defensively, I agree. Like, did you see that block on Aiden?
Yeah.
That got,
like, ridiculous.
Wow. And I think he got called a jump ball, but yeah. that was a block. That was fantastic. But offensively, he's just not a creative shot creator. I don't think he's an advanced ball handler. I don't think he's an advanced playmaker. And that's not to crap on Drew Holiday, who is a tremendous two-way player overall, mm-hmm. especially in the regular season, and he has shown in the playoffs that he can't deliver before, but there's just a limit to what he can do. Like, he's not going to snake around pick and rolls and then pull up from, like, the mid-range area and drop those buckets every single time down. Mm-hmm. He has a tendency to take these step-back threes where I'm just really... I just don't understand what he's trying to do with that. You already have one guy on the Bucks who takes pull-up threes and Giannis, who shouldn't.
Right.
So I just don't think the offensive match of that trio of Giannis, Middleton, and Drew kind of works. I think you need something a little bit more, which is why, and I know we shouldn't go into trades. We still have the finals to talk about. But, Ryan, I've been on this a little bit. You know this. CJ McCollum for Drew Holiday would be so much fun because I think it solves issues for both teams. Like, that's, I think that's the kind of player the Bucks would need mm-hmm. next to a Middleton and a Giannis instead. And that's, again, that's not to crab on Drew. I think the defense is perfect, but offensively they need more. We're seeing how a team like the Suns can get ahead by having shot creation. The Bucks just don't have it, and that's in large part on Drew.
Yeah, I was going to say that Drew for CJ idea solves problems offensively, but probably creates just as many problems defensively.
You know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's that as, I don't think it's as important. I really don't. Devin Booker, let's not kid ourselves here. He's not a good defender. I know that his reputation and the hype level around Devin has increased, and rightly so, because he's elevated himself, he's gotten into the finals, for crying out loud, but at no point are we looking at what he's doing defensively and going, oh, he's a lockdown defender, mm-hmm. he's a great defender. He's certainly not, but he is creating those shots, he is pulling offense out of his ass when he needs to, which at the end of the day is just that much more important.
Yeah, I mean, look at Trae Young, who gets the Hawks to the Eastern right. Conference Finals. Trae Young, who is objectively one of the worst defenders in the NBA. So I think, yep. you know, we've seen, especially as you get further and further into the playoffs, great offense tends to beat great defense. And I yes. think there is no one play more emblematic of that than the possession toward the end of the second half, or to end of the second quarter in game two,
right.
where... Yeah. Phoenix, I think there were 10 passes, and Milwaukee rotates perfectly on 9 of, like, that was just such great execution from Phoenix offensively and Milwaukee defensively. But then, you know, there was a tip and it went right to Ayton, and, you know, it ends with an and one. Like, sometimes you just can't, when you have a team that this is this locked in and has this many threats as Phoenix does, I mean, Milwaukee has some of the best defensive personnel in the league.
Yes, they do.
And, you know, they still, Phoenix has gone for what? 118 and, yeah, 118 in both games.
It's again, it's a testament to offense. It's a testament to be able to create shots in the flow of a game. It's a testament also not to be reliable or reliant, sorry, upon others. Like, if you look at the Bucks, someone like Brook Lopez, mm-hmm. he needs to be fed, whether that's threes or whether that's in the post. He's not going to get the ball from outside the arc and dribble himself into a post-up. He's not going to break guys down off the dribble. Even Giannis, I understand he can create, but those are solely drives. Like, he would be so much better playing off of a primary shot creator, shot initiator, play initiator, which is why I also think that the Bucks really need to give the ball more so to Chris Middleton and let him create. Not that that should increase his shot amount. Like, I think he took 26 shots in game one, for example. But I just want to see guys who are threats as jump shooters make decisions with the basketball, because that's what Phoenix is doing and it's working.
Yeah. I mean, Giannis, I think, has been probably the most pleasant surprise so far of the finals. Just, we didn't know whether he was going to play at all in game one or game two heading into the series. And it turns out not only does he play, but, you know, he had 20-point third quarter in game two, finishes with 42-12. So I will say, no matter what happens in these finals, Giannis is slander proof. Just like Paul George, you know, guiding the Clippers on that run to the Western Conference Finals without Kawhi, there will be no offseason slandering of Paul George. Giannis, I know, you know, earlier in the playoffs, especially in that Nets series, our friend Krishna was calling him Tall Westbrook, and, you know, like, that everyone was saying he doesn't have a bag at all. And yes, could he stand to improve his offensive skill set and, you know, his array of shot making technique? Yes, of course he could. Could he stand to cut down on some of these pull up threes that are just absolute momentum killers, and that the Suns are just conceding them at this point? They are leaving him so wide ass open, and they're letting him catch that ball, and they are not closing out. They're just fine. Prove that you can hit us with like five, and then maybe we'll change our strategy. So, you know, yes, he has some places to improve, but given what he's doing on one healthy knee, like, he went down a couple times in that game too. And every time he did, he's grabbing the knee, and I'm like, oh God, here, like, this, that was it. Cause if, you know, if he goes down, this thing is over. But fingers crossed.
I'm getting a little bit of that KD thing back from 2019, where I'm like, like, when he goes down, you just kind of get the feeling that you don't want to see that. You don't want to see him leave with an ACL tear or something worse. Like, just, But so far, so good. He seems to be adapting. Hopefully, these have just been somewhat isolated incidents. Hopefully, the Bucks training staff and medical staff are all over it and understand exactly what they, how long he can go and what his responsibility should be. Which is in part also why I kind of want to move him off the ball a little bit more. Yeah. I think when you look at Giannis, and I've certainly watched hundreds of games with him, he just asserts so much energy in also bringing the ball up and, like, looking for guys, like, being that primary playmaker. And you're also asking him to be a primary, you know, free-roaming defender. You're asking him to be a primary rebounder. You're asking him to be a primary scorer. You're asking him to be your primary, you know, foul creator. So at some point, something's got to give. Mm-hmm. And I think it now might be time, because he's struggling with that knee a little bit, just move him off the ball a little bit more. Have him cut. Have him, like, seal guys off in the post. Like, look, this is someone who's 6'11", who's got arms that are so long he can probably reach me right now. Right. I mean, it's not a problem. I would want to see him play in a different role, and I think a new coach would do that. But look, that's a different question. Like, do we even know if Bud, because if they made the finals now, is going to get fired? No, I don't think so.
He's safe. Right? He's absolutely safe.
Right?
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking too, which might not be the best thing in the world, but all right, it is what it is. Well, one thing before we move on, Brian, I really want to point this out, because we, but not just us, but the broader NBA community have been so busy talking about the Bucks playing dumb offense and playing just horrifically that I feel the Suns are flying under the radar a little bit. This isn't just like Milwaukee losing the series right now. This is also very much the Suns winning the series, in part because of what I brought up with the shot creation, but also DeAndre Ayton has been phenomenal, especially on the glass and defensively. Guys have stepped up. You mentioned Mikal Bridges earlier. He's been on fire, like averaging 20-plus points. Guys have come in, hitting threes, moving the basketball, switching defensively. Like, it's just been such a tremendous brand of basketball. So I really hope that people aren't listening to us and going, oh, like they're just painting this picture as this is the Bucks, mm-hmm. that something's wrong with and that's why the Suns are winning. No. Like, it's a part of it, sure, but the Suns are winning off their own merit. I think that's very important to note.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next, honestly. Awesome. Instead of focusing on just where the Bucks, I think the Bucks are leaving some things on the table. Like,
yes.
If Giannis cuts out some of those pull-up jump shots, if we get more lineups with Pat Connaughton in place of PJ Tucker, like, there are adjustments the Bucks can make that I think will make them more competitive in this series. But at the same time, Phoenix is just fantastic. Like, I want to address the narrative, because I've seen this pop up really throughout the first two games, of like, the best two teams didn't make the finals, so I don't care, I'm not gonna watch it. It's like, if you watch the Phoenix Suns play basketball and you don't think they could beat any team in the NBA, you're not paying attention. Yep. Like, I mean, that narrative is stupid, because how many times do we get the top two teams in basketball in the finals? Like, were the Miami Heat one of the two best teams last year?
No, not in terms of oval. But, so how do you define best? That's such a loose concept. Like, did they have a top roster? No, but did they have probably some of the best teammate chemistry? Like, yeah, they probably did. And that, like, it's a package deal, right? But I hear what you're saying. Like, overall, you would expect different teams to be there.
Yeah, like, exactly. But you made one of my next points is, like, how do you quantify who the best teams are? Is it just best regular season record, best net rating? Like, if we say that, then we very rarely get the two best teams in the finals. You know, in all sports, it's not just the NBA. This is not just exclusive to the NBA. Sometimes a team has a great regular season, meets a team in the playoffs, it's a bad matchup for them, and they're out. Or vice versa. Sometimes a team is mediocre in the regular season and then gets hot at the right time and goes on to win the title or goes on to the finals. Like, the New York Giants, both times they won the Super Bowl in recent years, were a pretty mediocre regular season team. And then they just got hot at the right time, or they faced the right teams at the right time. So, like, sure. I don't want to discredit either the Phoenix Suns or the Milwaukee Bucks. Did they benefit from some injury luck? Yes. Like, would the Bucks have won against the Nets if Kyrie and James Harden got hurt? Or didn't get hurt? Probably not. You know, would the Suns have, like, steamrolled through if they faced a healthy AD, a healthy Jamal Murray, a healthy Kawhi? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think there's no way to properly quantify that. But if the Phoenix Suns go on to win this year's title, which is, you know, they're up 2-0, they would have to lose four of the next five. It seems increasingly likely at this point. I don't want to hear any asterisk talk with them.
No.
Like, they're just a really effing good team. And honestly, they are so well made for how the modern NBA is played that will naturally, if they win this series, that will be the conversation. How do we, like, emulate the Phoenix Suns? How do we become the next Phoenix Suns? And part of it is going to be, well, you're not going to get a Chris Paul. And, like, you know, there's only one Chris Paul. So that's going to be difficult. But the archetype of players they've been targeting over the last couple of years, I think that is probably the more interesting dynamic that teams could start to take, especially with the draft and free agency coming up.
Well, so let's dig into that, because some people are listening to this who might not understand fully what that means, like what you're alluding to. So let's get into it. First and foremost, we can just bring up what I said earlier with the shot creation, because you just need shot creators. You have two of the best ones in the league in Chris Paul, Devin Booker. Shot creators in general are also very, very attractive for teams. That is why you pay guys a lot of money to just get shots up. Someone who can create off the dribble, that is That is by far what you're looking for. That's why Jalen Green and Kate Cunningham, for example, are guys who are projected to be top-tier picks. Like, you're looking at that type of players.
Right.
And then, of course, there are the defensive wings, like Mikal Bridges, Jay Crown. You know what? I don't even want to call it defensive wings. I want to call it two-way wings, because both of them can also contribute offensively. Sure. Like, there's a baseline that's higher because of their defense, and sometimes, like right now, Mikal Bridges is delivering on both ends of the floor. But yeah, like, you need those type of archetypes as well. Guys who can hit threes, guys who can defend at a high level, guys who can switch defensively onto multiple positions. I mean, if we're being really honest about Mikal Bridges, he can probably guard four positions, like, just because of his length. I one through four, and maybe even small ball fives if you're being completely ridiculous. I wouldn't rule that out. Crowder can also guard two to three positions. Like, those are just, that's, it's such a tremendous level of luxury and versatility that you get from those guys. And then, of course, there's Aiden, a guy who isn't a complete, you know, back to the basket player, someone who can attack off of face-ups, someone who can get garbage buckets, someone who's a lob threat and rim runner, someone who can set screens, someone who can pop and shoot the mid-range jump shot, and eventually should be able to actually branch out even to the three-point line. Like, you're absolutely right. These are the exact type of players that most teams are looking at, and it just succeeded for the Suns to gathering that package. And then if we go to the bench, Cameron Johnson is another multi-positional swing defender who can shoot threes. Cameron Payne is a point guard who can create his own offense off the dribble and could also spot up if that's necessary. So you're right. It is, they've built this team with the archetype of players that most teams find interesting or intriguing.
Yeah, and like, getting Torrey Craig off the scrap heap from the Bucks is just... that's a bad twist of fate for Milwaukee. But, like, I mean, Cameron Johnson, when they made that pick, when they traded down, they had number six, they traded down for 11 and Dario Saric. And I remember the consensus opinion, I think we were right in there. I think we liked the value of the trade, but Cameron Johnson was widely perceived, like, as one of the biggest reaches of that draft class.
Oh, we hated it.
Yeah.
I'll admit that. Yeah. I hated it. And you, I think you were pretty down on it too. I was like, what are you guys doing? This guy is basically Devin Booker's age. Like, you had a high draft pick. Why not go with someone with more upside? And you know what? A part of me still thinks that. I mean, look, because don't get me wrong. I think Cameron Johnson has been crucial to their playoff success because of just given how he's come off the bench. But I don't think he's the guy who makes or breaks everything.
Right,
like,
right.
I still think you could have gone with someone with more upside in the 2019 draft, and it would have been fine. But right now, he's filling a need. He is doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's contributing. He's, what, 25 now? So he's already in his physical prime. And he's shooting the ball. He's defending at a high level. He's switching around. Like, he's doing what he needs to be doing and in order to win. So if they had gone with someone with more upside who'd been significantly younger, it's fair to question, had that guy in this situation right now been productive?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, and, like, everything has fallen into place because of Chris Paul. Like, you could argue that had he not come to this team... they're definitely not in the finals. Maybe they get into the playoffs, but they probably lose in the first. Like, Chris Paul is the difference for this team. But they're at least, you know, we saw in the seeding games last year that the foundation was being laid here. And I get, like, it's a testament to James Jones to kind of realize, to correctly identify where your team is in the rebuilding process, because you don't take a prospect like Cameron Johnson. I think the thing that people hated, as you said, his age and his upside with the number 11 pick, you're typically targeting more. But what I really like about this Suns team is that everyone has bought into their respective roles. Like, you know, the offense is running through Chris Paul and Devin Booker. DeAndre Ayton, I just cannot say enough about this kid, because the number one pick from 3 years ago, like, you would expect, especially, you know, when they didn't have Chris Paul, it just seemed like this, all right, we're building this team around Booker and Ayton. If Booker's not getting shots, we're going to feed it through Ayton. He's going to run a ton of post-ups. And he took a big step back this year in terms of his touches. and he easily could have been a malcontent about it, but instead he was just like, all right, this is the best thing for us to win. This is the best way that I can help this team. So I'm just going to play my specific role as best I can. Mikal Bridges too. I mean, we see in game two, he's not just a spot up three guy. He's got a mid-range shot. You know, Devin Booker was joking after the game about it. It was like, I forget which reporter asked, but they're like, should we add him to the UNCP as like the mid-range trio now? And Devin Booker was like, ah, we'll see about that next year. But like, Mikal has more, not even Mikal, but like all NBA players can do more than what they show, especially role players, right? Like they are capable. Like Reggie Jackson, we're seeing this year. Reggie Jackson is much more capable of creating off the dribble and creating offense for himself than he showed in other spots. It's just fitting into your specific role. And I think
Tomas Satoransky is a different example, another example. Like, look at what he's doing for his national team right now. I mean, he's a superstar. He looks like someone who should be an NBA All-Star, but because the NBA is just that much better,
right. He
comes in and has to play a different type of role. You're absolutely right. Like, role players can do more than what they can or what they showcase necessarily. Yeah.
Right. And so if you're able to get guys to realize, we know you can do more than what we are letting you do, but this is the best thing for our team to win, and you can get all these guys to buy in like that, I think that's what leads to a team like this. This Suns team is the most genuinely enjoying team that I've seen. They remind me so much of the 2014 Spurs, where it's just like everyone is so selfless, and it's just so well coached. The execution is just pristine. It's like that. I mean, going into the finals, even, you know, back in the conference finals, I was like half facetiously saying Monty versus Bud was the biggest mismatch in this series. And what I meant by that was not only just like the X's and O's, and I think we saw that in game one in particular, where the Suns were just completely ready for whatever defensive scheme the Bucks threw at them. And they were even ready when the Bucks had counters in game two. You know, they changed up how they were guarding CP and Booker in particular. Again, the Suns were ready. They started feeding Mikal and Jay Moore. But I think the execution, like, when's the last time the Bucks have run an offensive set that made you go, wow, that was really well done?
No, you know, it's a fair question. I think there were some highlights in game two where, you know, Giannis had just an amazing pass to Pat Connaughton on the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
But those are more opportunistic individual accomplishments. It's not something that is drawn up, like, in that sense, because that was clearly like the play was to get Giannis a deep post touch. And then I don't remember who was guarding him. It might have been Aiden. I don't remember, but whoever it was came up too soon and too high, and then Connaughton just kind of recognized the play. So that wasn't a butt design play. That was just a team kind of reacting on an instinctive level. So you're right. I don't remember a single play where everything was drawn up, but you just go, wow, that was like Pop-esque 2014. Like, that is not happening.
Right. And I mean, that could be an adjustment for the Bucks to make going into game three, is like, we can't just rely on Giannis, Drew, and Chris to create in isolation, because we are not that type of team. Chris and Drew in particular are not, that's not how they are best. So if we can get the ball moving from side to side a little bit more, we can force Phoenix's defense to scramble a little bit more. That might lead to more openings where we can actually generate more easy offense.
Honestly, I think the most easy offense they can create, and I'm going to sound like I just transported here from back in the early 90s.
Oh, boy.
Brook Lopez post touches.
Yeah.
I mean, we forget just what kind of behemoth he is. Like, he's huge. Like, if there's a guy out there who matches DeAndre Ayton or maybe even exceeds him from a physical perspective, it's Brook Lopez. And Lopez, as we all know, was once a top five back to the basket player when he was with the old New Jersey Nets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has both an inside game and an outside game. And for the life of me, I don't understand why you would want Drew Holiday, a very shaky jump shooter, like prioritizing to get him the ball instead of getting like a deep post touch for Brook. Like, he's also a good foul shooter, so even if he gets absolutely plummeted and like gets the foul line, like he'll knock those bad boys down.
Mm-hmm.
He's a defender and has sort of been pigeonholed as this opportunistic scorer. Why not make him a more established part of your offense? We saw early in the playoffs here and there when it was necessary they could go to him, and he had that 33 pointer, I think it was.
Yep.
Like, why not? Why are you not making that choice of going inside just to see what's there? I understand Aiden is a good defender. I understand that Aiden has become more than just a good defender. He's become an awesome defender. But there has to be moments where that shot is there, where that opportunity is there. Get him down the block, deep, low position, and then let Middleton run around in semicircles, whatever. There are so many more layers than just what they're doing right now, which is giving Giannis the ball or giving Chris the ball and just letting everyone else know, get the hell out of the way.
Right.
That's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Okay. It's like everyone else just clear out to the corners and let Giannis create off the dribble, which has been, I mean, Giannis, despite the limitations in his game, being able to use that over and over again, and there's right. not really being a great counter to it, that's impressive. But
it is, but it shouldn't be the primary play.
Right. And I think part of it is, you know, because Giannis is such a limited shooter, like that the Suns just aren't respecting him as a shooter. If you are posting Brook while Giannis is on the floor, that's going to allow them to double team Brook. Then just run more of your offense through Brook when Giannis isn't on the floor. I mean, there are going to be a couple minutes every game where he's not. Get Brook the ball then, because this is another thing I want to touch on for, you know, looking ahead to game 3. Phoenix right now, you have Ayton. But after Dario Saric goes down with a torn ACL in game 1, and then Torrey Craig goes down with an injury in game 2, it sounds like he's avoided, you know, a major catastrophe, but his status is uncertain going into game 3.
Yeah, there was no structural damage, right?
Right, but like we don't know if he's going to be healthy or how much he's going to play. But regardless, like the Suns are pretty thin in the front court now.
What are you talking about? They have Frank the Tank.
Right. But, you know, like, if you can get Ayton into foul trouble,
yeah,
all of a sudden, they're not going to have the size to stop Giannis anymore.
Or Brook. You can suddenly get inside basically whenever you want to.
Right.
Like, then I'm not afraid of Jay Crowder or Cameron Johnson rotating over.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And by the way, to your point earlier, even if you go to the post up with Brook and you have Suns defenders cheating off of Giannis, I still don't like that, because if you give Giannis like 10 feet of open space, he will speed up. He will accelerate so quickly. And like, good luck to anyone standing there underneath the basket with a charging Giannis Antetokounmpo on you. Like, no. What was that tweet going around Twitter yesterday? Like, the picture of Johnny Knoxville?
Oh.
Going, hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and I'm going to take a charge from Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I didn't see that.
No one wants to do that. That is pain.
Yeah.
So I think they just need to open up the floor more, right? I mean, it does feel like whenever the Bucks are on offense, that the court shrinks.
Yeah.
Which it really shouldn't, considering how many good shooters they have. And if you want to go the post-up route, you can, because Brook is that good out there. And he's also a decent passer. Like, if Middleton suddenly, you know, jumps free, Brook can deliver that pass. Like, I'm so tired of that offense. It's so old. It's so, like, I just don't understand why it's not a little bit more advanced. You have so many exciting opportunities and possibilities there, and it's just the same thing over and over. And I thought this entire year was just basically one large experiment to say, what can we do else? And then comes the playoffs, and it's like let's revert back to what we did the past 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So that leads us to updated predictions, Mort. Right now, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, the Suns are a -480 favorite to win the title. But the Bucks are actually favored. They're a -4 in game 3. So it seems
Okay.
bettors are at least believing that the Bucks, you know, this is the time. Like, if they lose game three, they're down 3-0, this thing's over. If you, agreed, you know, if you steal game three, you're only down 2-1, you hold home court, all of a sudden it's a series again. So what do you think happens in game three, and who do you think ends up winning this title?
No, I think the Bucks are going to take game three. I do. I think they are just too talented to make this a sweep. Like what I said before at the finals preview we did, I said the one thing that would shock me is a sweep.
Yeah.
I still think that's in play. Not that I'm ruling it out, Suns fans. Don't worry. Like, if you do that, I'll be impressed. I think that would be insane. That would be really utterly insane if that happened. But I think the Bucks are going to take game three. I think game four is a little bit up for grabs, honestly, because if there's one thing we know, it's that Phoenix can come back and adjust. I mean, they've done that all throughout the playoffs, and then it comes down to coaching, and I just trust Monty Williams more in that scenario. So, Bucks in game three, Suns probably for the series, because like you said before, they would have to lose 4 out of 5. I don't think they do that. I don't think the Phoenix Suns in the season 2020-2021 lose 4 out of 5 at this point. I just don't.
Yeah, I'm right with you, Bucks. I do think the Bucks will win game three. I think these games, again, it's like they've been, it's not like the Suns have blown them out in either game. Like, right. Milwaukee has stayed within striking distance, just hasn't been able to get over that hump. And, like, Phoenix has an answer every time. Like, you cut the lead to 6, and Phoenix goes on a 5-0 run. And it's just, that's deflating. And, you know, you lose the momentum that you were generating. But when you've got the home court on your, or home crowd on your side, maybe that can help. I don't know. But I feel like this series is closer than it's looked so far. And again, I think there are more adjustments that Milwaukee can make than Phoenix has to make. I do wonder, especially if Torrey Craig misses this game, how many minutes can you play Ayton? You know, like, you might have to go, what, he was at 39 in game one, 42 in game two already.
Yeah, he's averaging 40.5 minutes.
Yeah. The good thing for, really for both sides, I guess, is that there are 2 days off before games three and 2 days off before games four. So you... Yeah. Like, I think this is a game that we see both benches cut to, you know, like, two guys, two rotation players.
that seems correct, yes.
And honestly, like, God, I mean, are they going to keep playing Jeff Teague, do you think?
I mean, what are their options?
They don't have many, but, like, I wonder if you really just go almost completely a six-man rotation.
Who's your sixth?
Connaughton. Oh, I know.
Connaughton.
Yeah.
And then you just... Well, see, then you have to extend the minutes of PJ. I still don't like that. Again, Brian, I mean, if there's... You know how every year we as an NBA community always grow a little bit smarter on basketball? In some extent, there's certain things that you just pick up. For me, this year, it's been... just how overrated defensive-only guys are.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have them on the court for this long, like, he's not going to make the difference. Like, you can give PJ Tucker all the minutes that you want, but you're essentially going to play 4-on-5 basketball offensively. That's just not working out for me. I think I need a little bit of Bobby Portis in there. And people are like, you can't play Bobby Portis this series. He's atrocious defensively. Yeah, and PJ Tucker is atrocious offensively.
Right.
Like it's and we all seem to be in agreement that offense is better than defense because, you know, shot creation, shot making is really the point of the game. So what the hell are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we going with the coach's mentality, defense is better, when you have a guy like Portis who, in fairness, and I'm not trying just to hype him up because I like the guy. This is a dude who can come out of nowhere and put up a 25-15 game. He just is. Like, he has that in him. Does PJ Tucker have that? I don't think so. I don't think so whatsoever. And sometimes you need that type of player off the bench.
Yeah.
I would hate to see them go 6 deep, also because I don't want to see Giannis just extend himself even more.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a knee injury. I would try to include Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis, and then I would just not worry about the defense. I would tell those guys, look, try your best defensively. don't get caught up in all the criticism. Shoot, though. Like, don't, and don't get passive with the shots. Mm-hmm. Shoot. For crying out loud, shoot. And to Bryn Forbes' credit, he's playing 8.8 minutes per game in the series, and he's jacking up 3.5 three-pointers per game in 8.8 minutes. So kudos to Bryn Forbes for just chucking them up there. I love it.
Yeah.
More of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, like, we keep going back to it, but this is where they really miss Dante DiVincenzo. If you had just one more rotation player that you trust, I would feel a lot better about the Bucks' chances in this series.
Or Bogdan Bogdanovic. Oh, what was that? Right?
If they Bogdan Bogdanovic, they would win the title this year.
Yeah, I agree. But no, you're right. I mean, Dante, while not necessarily a strong, like, you know, break it down off the dribble player who can really create, he's a fundamentally sound passer. He's a good defender. He's a strong rebounder. He can shoot, especially off of spot ups. Like, he would just give them a different level of energy and two-way play. Mm-hmm. Like, he wouldn't, in this series, he would play, I think, almost assuredly, like 35 minutes per game.
Oh, yeah.
Because you would need the two-way play. So if you remove that from the equation, that's just a huge drop-off, especially if you replace it with, you know, Pat Connaughton, who is, I like Pat, but he's like a whole level below Dante, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, again, that, like, Dante, because he is a two-way guy, you don't have to rely on Bryn Forbes or Bobby, who are really offense-only liabilities on defense, or Jeff Teague, who I don't, like,
oh, he's a liability everywhere. Right,
I want the office space. Like, what would you say that you do here?
Yeah.
But, like, we wouldn't have that with Dante. And if you have, you know, if you had Dante with the starters and Connaughton, that's a 7-man rotation. I'd feel, I know, including PJ Tucker, that's a 7-man rotation that I feel much more confident in, especially knowing the Suns' injuries now. Like, the Suns really go 8 deep without Dario, and if Torrey's hurt, they might only go 7 deep moving forward as well. So, you know, benches are going to shrink as the series goes on, but I still just feel more confident in the Suns' other guys than I do Milwaukee's. And if the Suns and Milwaukee's stars play to a standstill, as we saw in game two, if a big Mikal Bridges game, if we get one big Jay Crowder game, like, these, you know, we don't need them every single night, but if you get one from a different guy every night, that swings one game, and those things add up over the course of a series.
Agreed. Do you think there's merit? You kind of alluded to it previously, but I want to go back to it. Do you think there is merit in letting Giannis kind of embed it up a little bit in game three, where Bud tells him right off the bat, go get me 2 fouls on DeAndre Ayton immediately?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to either end with 2 offensive fouls on Giannis or 2 defensive fouls on Ayton. But yeah, I think that would be my best strategy. And it's not necessarily, you know, like, go try to do something dirty to draw fouls, but, like, just...
Oh, no, that's also not what I was insinuating. Yeah. Like, real fouls, just, like, draw contact.
Right, but, I mean, that's just attack the paint, which Milwaukee did super well in the first quarter of game one. They were up like 18-0 in points in the paint. And the only reason this game was close is because the Suns were on fire from three-point range.
Well, wait, are you telling me threes are better than twos?
As it turns out, the Bucks lost the math problem in game two.
The old-time NBA boomers are going to come after us
now. I know. But, I mean, I do think that's the play for Milwaukee. Like, you still have the size advantage. You have some shaky jump shooters who really haven't been shooting well throughout the playoffs. Use your size to your advantage. Attack the paint. If you can get Ayton in foul trouble, then you have an even bigger size advantage. And that's going to open up a lot for Giannis and Brook in particular. Even, like, I mean, whenever Ayton's off the court and Brook is on, he's going to have a, what, like 5 or 6 inch height advantage over most of the other guys? Like, he's just going to be there if a rebound caroms anywhere close to him. He's going to have the height advantage to pull that in and put it right back up. So, you know, there's a lot of, a lot more goes into it than just these guys are too small to guard me. There are other advantages as well. So, yeah, I think that's the play if you're Milwaukee. And then defensively, I mean, just praise the Suns miss the open shot. Cause, like, you're not, you're, there's just, you have to concede something. Like, And I guess that goes back to why good offense is better than good defense, is because you can't stop everything. There's no way, unless you can apparate through screens, you're going to have to give up a mid-range shot, an open three, a layup, whatever. Yep. So you have to figure out what is the thing I am most willing to give up, and then, you know, live with those results, because there's a chance that, yeah, I mean, if Phoenix's guys keep hitting the shots they are, you're probably going to lose this series either way.
Yeah. You know who, and I'm going to keep banging on that drum, but I think it's important. You remember who the Bucks traded away to get PJ Tucker? Because I do. DJ Augustine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, DJ Augustine, who I was, the other day I was like going through potential free agents for the Sixers. I'm like, DJ Augustine would be a good fit. And I thought about it for 5 minutes, and then I went to Spotrac and looked up his contract, and he is under contract for 2 more years. So yeah, strike that one off the list.
Like, the contract is bad,
yeah,
but he's a guy who can pass the basketball. He can actually hit three-pointers. He can create his own shot. That would have been a fair counter to someone like Cameron Payne. Like, if you're going up against backups. Because, like you said, you just brought up Jeff Teague moments ago. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting virtually nothing from your guards outside of Middleton and Holiday, and on occasion Forbes, because you're not playing his ass. Like, I don't know. I think Milwaukee Galaxy brain their roster a little bit too much.
Well, I mean,
like, you already had Brooke. You already had Giannis. What the hell do you need PJ Tucker for?
Do you think they win the Nets series without Tucker on Durant, though?
Yeah, I do. If they had more offense in the backcourt, yes, I do. I still think they would have.
I don't think they would have.
I still think they would. I appreciate what he did against Durant, but Durant was still balling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was still hitting his shots. And you know what? It was sort of that thing where you put him on KD instead of letting Giannis tire himself out or whatever. But you know what? I'm pretty sure Giannis would have been up to that task. Plus, it gives you so many layers to have additional passers and playmakings in there if you have guys who can handle the ball. I'm going to... This is going to be a theme of my all year long. Our listeners are going to drop off like flies. I apologize already, because I'm just out on the defensive wings, bigs who can't do anything. I'm out. I don't think they do anything. There's a reason we don't see that type of player on the Phoenix Suns roster. Like, everyone there can actually do something on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. So before I move on to the Simmons Minnesota stuff, I want to also get your thoughts on Finals MVP. Right now, Chris Paul is the favorite, -140.
Yeah, you don't have to go further. It's there. You said it.
Chris Paul?
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. And you should agree, because if you don't agree, you're an idiot.
Well, so Devin Booker's a +250. Giannis is a +400.
Yeah. No.
Everyone else is. So Ayton's a +2,000.
Don't care.
Yeah, everyone else is way, 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 way out.
I don't care. It's Chris Paul.
Yeah, I lean that way as well. But I think it's... I mean, I think the odds are spot on. Like, it's going to be one of Paul, Booker, or Giannis, which is, you could have predicted that very easily coming into the series as well.
No, but, like, if the series ends right now, it's Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, everything can change. We're only two games in. If the next two games, Devin Booker averages 40 and Chris Paul averages 11 and, like, it's just a complimentary player, of course, that changes. But right now, Chris Paul is shooting 56.5% from the field, 58% from downtown, 8.5 assists, 27.5 points, 4 rebounds. All right, 4 turnovers, but you know what? I don't care. They're still winning. They're up 2-0. He's making the clutch plays. He's making all the right plays. I mean, there's just no one right now who's playing as effectively as he is.
Yeah. If the series ended today, I completely agree. It would be CP. I do think Booker could be... You know, like, if you have $10 to throw, I wouldn't hate throwing $10 in Devin Booker right now.
Right. Right.
Just because, like, the adjustment of putting Drew on CP right away.
Yeah.
It did cause him to be slightly more inefficient than he was in game one, have more turnovers than he did game one. And they were just getting the ball out of Chris's hands more. I mean, I would have to double check his usage, or, like, his number of touches even better. But it felt like, you know, he would cross half court. Drew would just be, like, right up on him right away. And then, you know, they would, like, pass it to Booker and have Booker be the primary playmaker for some of these sets. So, you know, if...
Again, the value of shot creation, my man.
Right, I know, yeah. I mean, yeah, going back to your earlier point, like, not only do you need one, you need two guys who can consistently do that. And Booker, I think, has proved, you know, God, I mean, some of those threes he were hitting. That's another thing, too. Like, he was just hitting some audacious pull-up threes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the narrative heft for Chris Paul in particular is going to make it really hard for him to lose it at this point. But as you said,
but he's backing it up.
Yeah, if Drew can limit CP's effectiveness to any extent, and that opens up Booker to just go off, which I think would be the logical outcome here. I don't know, man. I could see a world where Devin Booker is finals MVP. And if the Bucks come back in this thing, Giannis is running away with it.
Oh, yeah. There's no one else. Which, it's really part of the problem.
Yeah.
Like, look, if we end up going with Bi Felicia on the Bucks in a week, I mean, I have some takes.
Oh, boy.
And I think you do, too.
I do. Yeah, I mean... I just hope for Drew and Chris's sake that they can get it going at home, because I think both guys are going to catch a lot of heat this offseason if they can. And I think it's going to ignore how well both of them played for most of the playoffs. Like, it's easy to pile on after games where they struggle offensively, but Drew has been so good defensively throughout the playoffs, and Chris has had... And without Chris Middleton, they're probably losing in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Notice that I wasn't really that critical of Middleton today.
Yeah.
At all. I mean, I don't think... I understand that he had a rough game, too.
Yeah.
He did. I'm not really putting that on his feet, at his feet. Again, he is not supposed to be a guy who creates his own offense to the extent that he's been asked to do in recent weeks.
Yeah.
That was never his game. He was one of those guys who will be like, you know, the third guy to handle the ball at least. He'll be the secondary shot taker, but he would be someone who got the ball delivered a little bit more to him, found, you know, his own pathways in the offense. Now he's basically being forced to take over possessions after possessions after possessions, which has never been part of his game. So I'm not pointing any fingers at Chris Middleton. And if anything, I'm so impressed with how he's overcome that change.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's phenomenal. I'm not going to sit here and say otherwise. He's been outstanding. And what's happening right now is just because they need something. And they don't have it. So they're going to the next closest thing who has that, which is shot creation. And that's Chris Middleton, a role he's never been comfortable with, and a role he's never done before in a high volume under these circumstances, NBA Finals as well. Like, it's what they're asking him to do right now is so far removed from what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here even advocating to keep doing it because they don't have other choices.
Right.
So I'm not going to point at Chris Middleton and say that he did a bad job. I am very impressed with what he's done.
Well, no, it's a good point for really both guys. Like, they might be one step on the offensive pecking ladder higher than their ideal role would be.
Yeah.
Like, if you had Middleton as your third option and Drew as your fourth option offensively, who could just go harass the hell out of opposing guards.
Or a CJ McCollum as your second option and a Chris Middleton as your third option. Problem solved.
Yep, that's true. At least offensively.
Well, I mean, look, that's their problem right now.
Yeah.
That is primarily their problem right now. And also, Drew Holiday might actually be a significant defensive upgrade for Portland.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, and that's what they're all talking about in Portland anyway.
Yeah.
So, I'm just saying, I think there's merit to some sort of deal in that arrangement.
Oh boy, the Bucks by Felicia, if they lose this series, is going to be an absolute trade.
We're going to have some guests on, and I have a feeling that maybe not this particular trade, but I have a feeling that if the Bucks do end up losing this series, our guests are going to agree that, yeah, something's not working.
Yeah.
Something needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. Like, they should not be in... What team, after getting to the finals, is in blow-it-up mode unless it's like... I mean, not even the Raptors, they won, where Kawhi leaves.
Right.
But, like, you know, like, you've got a good core in place here, but, yeah, the supporting cast needs some tinkering, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's not blow-it-up. I think that's a little bit disingenuous, because it's more of a... Like, what's the word here? What the wording probably? Like, they need to hit on the margins first and foremost.
Yeah.
Which I think they did with Bobby Portis and Bryn Forbes.
Yeah.
I still think they're doing it wrong by not playing them more, but that's what that is. But they just need to make sure they keep hitting on the margins. They need to make sure that they find the right, like, group of guys, very much like Phoenix. Like, look, Phoenix didn't even make the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Now they're probably going to win the damn playoff, or the playoffs, the damn finals, the damn championship. Like, because as you touched on 50 times today, they have unselfish guys who know the roles. And I'm not saying the Bucks have selfish guys. They certainly don't. But in terms of knowing their roles, like we just talked about it. Like, Chris Middleton is doing something he's never been accustomed to. Jrue Holiday is far too high on the pecking order. Like, something's got to give here. Something has to change in that little bubble that they're in. Something has to just, change.
Well, on the bright side, if the Suns do end up winning the title, it's going to be a good story for... No, I think it'll give other teams hope. Like, other teams that have been stuck, mired in these, like, years-long rebuilds, or...
Right.
You know, rebuilds that have gone on, like, span two rebuilds, which we're looking at Orlando in particular right now. But it goes to show that, I mean, you know, if you have the right pieces in place, like, Minnesota might not be that far away from being a very good team if they just pull the one lever that they need to bring in that one missing piece that they don't have that provides so much for them. Or, like, Sacramento.
I was about to say Sacramento. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, they should be looking at this Suns team and saying, like, all right, it's not hopeless. Like, this Suns team missed the playoffs for 10 straight years. It's just been so aggressively mediocre. I'm also glad, like, you know, the narrative about Devin Booker, like, all the losing tendencies that he picked up over the years. Like, that was stupid. And it's a stupid narrative for any, like, Zach LaVine is not a losing player because he's been on bad teams. He's just been on bad teams. That's why he's a losing player.
Right.
Put more talent around him.
Joel Embiid, remember?
Yeah.
Like, I think, so maybe I'm misremembering. Was it Joel Embiid who fought back on that one? Because I think it was the Sixer. Okay, it was Embiid. Because I remember that being brought up to him at some point. Like, are you worried about that? And he was just like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we all want to win. Like, our competitive spirit doesn't go away because we lose a game. Like, what the... What?
Right.
Like, that's not how these guys are wired. I mean, you bring up Sac is perfect. By the way, the Bulls could be one of those teams as well. I mean, if they get a Mike Conley in free agency, for example, not that I think they will, but, like, if that somehow they surprised the world and signed a Mike Conley, they could be right in there.
Yeah. Or, like, Kyle Lowry.
Or Kyle Lowry, too. Right. Exactly. I mean, it just goes to show that it teams that are, like, not necessarily, you know, way down, like, you know, losing, like, 70 games a year or something. Like, okay, those are obviously far away. They have so much stuff they need to go through first. But, like, teams who are outside the playoff picture, it doesn't necessarily prevent them from being a top-tier team if they just get, like you said, one or two signings that just make sense. It doesn't need to be this step-by-step slow approach every single time. I mean, for crying out loud, the Suns didn't even make the playoffs last year after going on an 8-game winning streak in the bubble.
Yeah.
They still didn't even make the playoffs, and, like, you could just see that they need a little extra something. They got it, and that was all she wrote. So you're right. This should give hope to a lot of teams that have struggled for a long time but have certain pieces in place. Like, if you're an empty roster, sure, it's going to take a long time.
Right. Right.
But Detroit, man. Like, Detroit.
Yeah.
If Kate Cunningham hits, if Killian Hayes hits, boom, there are your two players who can create. Then you have Jeremy Grant, right? Oh, that's a third scorer. that's your Chris Middleton in this scenario, then you might just need if round that roster out with a few veterans, and in 3 years' time, boom, they might be in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not to say the Suns didn't have talent. Chris Paul is the only reason they've gotten good.
Right,
but,
right.
But, right, you know, right. You add the one missing piece to the puzzle, it's like, yeah, things are not as bleak as they seem for even these teams that are stuck in purgatory forever.
Right. Well, one final thing before we go to Ben Simmons, because I just want to touch on this. You know how Chris had such a bad reputation for a while, not because of his play, like that was always sublime, but you know how he always would speak so much, like Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan would tune him out, they wouldn't take him seriously, they wouldn't listen to all his advice and his barking and all that, all those reports that came out back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Monty Williams probably looked at his roster and realized, oh, I actually have a group of guys here that would listen.
Yeah,
I don't have a Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan issue here.
Yeah,
I have guys who are so desperate to win because they haven't been in the playoffs. They were so hurt by going on that 8-game winning streak in the bubble and then not making the playoffs that they're just ready for anything that helps them get there. And Chris Paul is that something. And then when he came in, they were sponges. They absorbed everything that he was saying. They listened. I think that plays such a big brand, like, or such a big part of it. Like, if you're willing to listen, if you're willing to give a guy like Chris Paul, like, the time of day, I mean, your potential just goes up dramatically.
Yeah. So let's go to one of these other teams that might be eyeing a similar worst to first jump, the Minnesota Timberwolves. John Krasinski of The Athletic reported yesterday that the Timberwolves pride themselves on getting involved in trade talks, and sources indicate that they will be in on Ben Simmons in addition to a number of other players. Dane Moore, who was a Timberwolves guy, reported that Gersan Rosas, the team president of the Timberwolves, met with Elton Brand at the Combine to at least discuss a Ben Simmons trade. Nothing is imminent by any means, but you know, these conversations are at least being had. So we have to start with this context. According to, this is John again, he says, Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and D'Angelo Russell, the Timberwolves want to keep all three guys. He said, in particular, Timberwolves view Russell as a part of the core and want to keep it that way. So if you're Philly, is there a Timberwolves offer that makes sense without Towns, Russell, or Edwards?
I mean, it's just, like, I think this is such a poor way of going to the negotiation table.
right. We want, like, your second best player, but we won't give up any of our three best players, even though we're a much worse team than you.
Right, exactly. It's just, and I understand, you know, there's skepticism around Ben Simmons, but if you're trading for Ben Simmons, I have to assume that you're a believer in Ben Simmons, because the contract you would take on is so dramatic that if you didn't think that he would come in and be more than your third best player, you would be acquiring for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
So, like, I just think that's a weird approach. But at the same time, if I'm sitting there as an observer, I have no horse in that race, I still kind of get where they're coming from. I just wouldn't engage with Philadelphia on a trade then. I would just then say, you know what? It's fine. Let's not trade for Ben Simmons. Let's just stick with these guys who can create their own shots consistently, and let's go from there. But if they are in the Ben Simmons game, then you have to be willing to give up something. I mean, Ricky Rubio and Malik Beasley is not going to do it, I don't think. I mean, I like Beasley more than most, by the way, just when it comes to the type of player that he is. You know, personal issues notwithstanding.
Right.
But offensively speaking, he's a guy who I have a lot of faith in. I think he would fit in so well next to Embiid. However, and I want to look up this stat before I actually say it, because I want to be absolutely sure that I've looked up, like, a ton of player profiles recently, including his, and I just want to make sure that I remember it correctly. Because, yes, and fortunately I did. He is not a guy who creates a lot of his own offense, but I want to get the percentages right. 75% of his offense is assisted.
Mm.
And here's the thing about that. if you are basically putting him into the Ben Simmons role, or not like the playmaking role, but you have to take up a certain amount of touches, mm-hmm. like where are those shots going to come from? Who's going to pass you the ball to be that effective? Like, okay, then you could argue if we get Ricky Rubio, he's a guy, sure. But Rubio is not really a scorer, so teams can really back off of him and crowd Malik Beasley a little bit more. So I don't know if that whole setup kind of works.
Right.
But if by some chance they found things out, and like let's say they got a Kyle Lowry in free agency, okay, that changes everything, because then you have Malik Beasley who can play that off-ball role, who would fit so well with Embiid. He's sneaky athletic as well, Malik Beasley is. So I would like that, but like, is Kyle Lowry coming there? Like, is there any signs of that? I think you need to have a follow-up move ready if you're the Sixers and you pull this pull the trigger on this trade.
I'll go one step beyond that. I don't think there's a framework that makes sense if it's just a two-team deal and those three guys are off limits.
And I would agree with that.
And I think the main reason why, and I've said this is every time we bring up the Ben Simmons discussion, if you're trading Ben Simmons and you're Philly, you need to get a lead guard back. And Ricky Rubio, who has never shot above 41.8% from the field, is not the answer. Now, I don't know that D'Angelo Russell is the answer, but if you're not getting, you know, if Rubio is the best lead guard you're getting back, you're totally right. Like, or, you know, if they don't even get Rubio, let's say they do like a Beasley and one Hernan Gomez and whatever, throw in whatever else you need to make the salaries work, who's creating the offense there? Like, yeah, the offense is going to run through Joel Embiid, but someone needs to get Joel Embiid the ball. Or they're, you know, you're going to try to pass to shooter like Danny Green if he comes back. Seth Curry, you're going to try to get them the ball in open threes, but who's going to pass it to them? You need someone to actually do the playmaking. So the Sixers just wouldn't have that element. So I don't think a two-team deal makes sense if Towns, Russell, Edwards are off limits. I do think a three-team deal could. If Simmons goes to Minnesota, Minnesota sends some of this stuff to the third team, and the third team sends a point guard plus whatever else back to Philly. And Lowry's the interesting name there. Like if,
oh, like a sign and trade with Toronto?
Yeah. Like if Kyle Lowry wants to go to the Sixers,
yeah,
they don't have cap space at all, even if they trade Ben Simmons. So at most, they'll have their non-taxpayer mid-level. They will probably just have the taxpayer mid-level. So, you know, the signing him outright is out of the question, because Miami's going to come calling with 20-plus million. Knicks are going to come calling. Mavericks are going to. So that's not an option. But
yeah, it would have to be a sign and trade to make the numbers work.
Right. But if he's like, I want to go back home, I want to go to Philly, I think I can help this team. And Toronto, like, okay, the other option is we're going to lose him for nothing. Like, he says, I want to go to Philly, but otherwise, if you guys don't agree to a sign and trade, I'm just going to Miami, and you're not getting anything back in return for me, and I'm going to destroy you for the next year or 3 years or however long I send there. You know, Toronto will have some incentive to at least get something back in return. So, you know, could you do Beasley and whatever else, and Beasley comes to Philly and Toronto gets, you know, the rest of that package from Minnesota? That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. Toronto would do that immediately if they knew that they were going to lose Kyle either way. I mean, getting Malik Beasley in there alongside, oh God, like, look at that roster. Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent, OG, Pascal. I mean, the number four overall pick as well, whoever that's going to be. Like, that's something for Toronto as well. I mean, you suddenly have a lot of offense on that team. I like that.
Yeah, or even maybe Beasley goes to Philly as well and Minnesota sends Hernan Gomez or Jaden McDaniels, who had a good rookie season. You know, if Toronto's moving on from Lowry and wants to get younger,
yeah,
you bring in a Jaden McDaniels who's under a rookie contract for three more years.
That would not be bad, because I still think, like, you brought up a couple times in previous episodes that Pascal could, like, really slide up to the five on occasion. Mm-hmm. that would mean that someone as switchable as Jaden McDaniels makes sense. And he can shoot, too, so he's not just a one-way guy. Like, there is some offensive upside to him as well, even though he was very raw. But, like, he's 20. I still think there's offensive upside there. Yeah, I kind of like that. I still think if you're Toronto, you probably prefer Beasley, though.
Of course.
I mean, Just because, like, he's a proven 19-point scorer, or at least over his two seasons in Minnesota, which is only for 51 games, but, like, he's averaged 20. I think that matters a little bit. And plus, he's giving you 3.5 triples per game. Like, he's been unreal as a shooter. So, I hear you, though. Like, and honestly, if that's what you're giving up, if you're Minnesota, like Malik Beasley and Ricky Rubio, you sure as hell can add in Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, if you're in on the Ben Simmons train, if you want Ben Simmons, you want him for a reason, then the inclusion of Jaden McDaniels shouldn't be a deal breaker. And I realize that Minnesota fans listening to this would go, but we love Jaden. I'm very much aware.
Right.
I follow a lot of you guys on Twitter. I'm very much aware you love Jaden. But, I mean, if your front office is willing to take on $147 million of Ben Simmons, it comes with certain expectations. So,
but you just have to give up something. Like, that's right. What Philly does not have to trade Ben Simmons to you if you're not going to give up any of your main pieces of value. You know, like, right. You got to give up. And if you're keeping Russell and Edwards and Towns, then yeah, Jaden McDaniels and Beasley are going out in that trade. I don't think there's any two ways about it.
Right.
Like, Culver is not the value. Okogie heading into the last year of his contract is not the value.
You're right. This is probably the play. Again, I'll say it. I wouldn't do it if I'm Minnesota. I wouldn't entertain Ben Simmons. I don't think he makes sense. I honestly don't think Ben Simmons makes a lot of sense on any roster because of that contract and just because of, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So, oh God, I'm so low on him, and I feel wrong for being that because, you know, he's obviously defensively, playmaking-wise, rebounding-wise, you know, transition-wise, he's elite. His basketball mind is so great. I really hate being so low on a guy that's that smart of a basketball player when it comes to understanding patterns and all of that. But, yeah, I mean, just think of how much you would have to cover because of his, you know, mental lapses of not wanting to shoot the ball and him not being able to hit threes and him not being able to hit free throws. Just, you would have to adjust so many things for his sake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Why would you not instead rather go for someone like Malcolm Brogdon, who might be the most plug-and-play player in the entire NBA, who likely will come for a similar package in a trade?
I mean, I actually think of all the places where I think Simmons could do best, Minnesota's up there.
Because of what, though?
Because of Towns. Having a 7-footer who can space the floor like that. I know Embiid shot well this year, but he's still, like, fundamentally a, you know, not...
Oh, yeah, he's a more natural shooter.
Yeah, I mean, like, Embiid wants to operate near the post. He's not going to be a back-to-the-basket guy as much. He had much more of a face-up game this year, but, like, he still wants to take guys down low. Towns can operate much more from the perimeter than Embiid can.
Correct. He's more of an offensive, versatile player.
Right, and if you have Russell, if you're keeping both Russell and Edwards too, I know Edwards didn't shoot great from three this year, but he certainly fired him up, you know, 7.2 per game on almost 33% shooting. I would assume that's going to improve as...
Yeah, and didn't he shoot better as
the in the second half? On? Yeah. I mean, he just played better, so it would not surprise me.
Yeah, he's a 35% shooter after the All-Star break in 36 games.
Yeah, there you go. So having Ben feed those three guys where he doesn't need to focus on his offense as much, he can add much more of a defensive presence to a team that was 28th on that end of the floor this year. Like, if they can pull this thing off without giving up any of those three guys, if I'm Minnesota, I don't care who else I have to trade. I wouldn't trade, like, multiple unprotected first for him or anything like that, but if it's really as simple as Rubio, Beasley, and McDaniels, and maybe one first, Definitely. It's Philly, I think, is the one that's, you know, that's the one where they're saying no unless you can loop in a third team and get us Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley or, like, I mean, I don't know who else.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Lonzo. Maybe Dinwiddie.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. But at the same time, I'm thinking, so let's say Minnesota makes the playoffs. And Ben Simmons just goes MIA again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand that you, when you have multiple shot creators, as we talked about with Phoenix in particular, that's great. You need that. But you don't also want to find yourself playing 4-on-5 offensive basketball, regardless. And if teams aren't afraid of Ben Simmons scoring the basketball, then they can start playing him for the pass. And if you start playing Ben for the pass, and knowing full well he's not going to respond to start driving or getting to the cup, mm-hmm. then I think you can pretty much nullify him offensively. I mean, again, to me, it's the basement, right? Or like it's the lower floor,
the floor
of Ben Simmons. Yeah. It's just, we saw this year how low that could go.
Yeah,
like the baseline's not high. It's much lower than we thought. So I'm working under worst case scenarios here, that because I think you have to. I think if you're an NBA organization who's considering investing $147 million in Ben Simmons, you need to operate with that in mind. That, look, if he hits his floor, we're going to be utterly screwed from the get-go. I think you have to have that consideration. Not saying you need to act on it. Maybe you're so confident in your training staff and your developmental staff and that Ben is ready to move on and flip the page. Great. And if that's the case, go ahead. Maybe he turns it on. Maybe that's a concern we never have to mention or bring up ever again. But if he just completely falls inwards, then what? It doesn't matter if you have four all-star guys putting up numbers around him, because teams can adjust. Teams can stop guarding him.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're Minnesota, you are more confident that the pieces surrounding Ben will fit better than what Philly has. Because Tobias, too, is not, like, he's not a high-volume three-point guy. Like, a lot of his offense is in the mid-range and the post as well. So, like, the spacing, I think, would be a lot better for Ben in Minnesota than it is for Philly. And
maybe that's enough.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if Towns isn't trying to post guys up, and if he's happy to, you know, float on the perimeter and be a threat from there, then sticking Ben in the dunker spot all of a sudden might be okay. Because he's not, you know, he's not clogging things up for Towns like he would be for Embiid.
But would you negate his passing by doing so?
It's possible. I don't think so, though. I mean, you wouldn't have to do that every time down the floor.
No, of course not. But I'm just saying, like, if you put him in the dunker spot,
mm-hmm.
like, are you getting the full value of what he can do from a passing perspective? And like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, teams would try to goad him into shooting still. Like, you would try to goad him, and you would still play off of him and, you know, make sure you're covering guys in the corners because he's going to be looking to make that play. Try to bait him into a hook shot. But, you know, he was developing some of those during the regular season. They just went missing in the playoffs. Like, I think there is a chance that Ben getting a fresh start on a team that has better spacing for him, where he's not going to be under the limelight as much, because, like, you know, nationally the focus on Philly versus Minnesota is night and day.
That's true.
And Minnesota, too. Like, I know, they will go, if they made that trade, they would go in saying our goal is to win a title. Their goal is just to get back to the playoffs.
Of course.
So they might not care.
And he helps them with that.
Yeah, but right, exactly. He would help them win a lot of regular season games. They would be a legit playoff contender, and they might not care if his weaknesses get exposed in next year's playoffs and he has to go back to the lab next summer and continue working, because they're not ready to win a title yet. Like, he's only 24, you know, like, he's age-wise aligns pretty well with Towns, Russell, and Edwards. Like, he can grow for another couple years, and then they'll be ready to win. But, like, I just don't think Ben Simmons, in his current form, is ready to win a title in the role that he has to play. And going to a team like Minnesota might be able to let him grow into that role over the next year or two. And, like, maybe then they're ready to. But I
agreed. If he's also keen.
Yeah. Yeah.
like, we need to also be honest that he hasn't really shown a whole lot of desire to listen to criticism and get better in that sense. It's very much there's this, I don't know what it is. Maybe him pushing back on him having issues. I don't know what it is. But I think if you get a conversation with him, if you're Minnesota, and you understand, here's a guy who's actually willing to flip the page. Here's a guy who's actually dedicated to saying, look, start fresh. I haven't played a single NBA game in my mind. Like, I'm all brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe there's a chance. I just get a whole lot of, do you promise to improve Andrew Wiggins' PTSD from this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. All right. Well, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So hope everyone enjoys game three of the finals. We will be back next week. We have a couple good guests lined up from both teams' perspective. So we'll potentially have some Bye Felicias to get into shortly. But until then, enjoy the finals. Draft is only a couple weeks away, too, so it's going to be a fun time of year for all of us. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Take care.